Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 105 of Geek Town Radio. This week I have with me Ross.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. If I could say at the top of the show, Dave, it's a big thing in America. I don't suppose it's so much over here, but this month is Tripod Month in America. So this is where a lot of big podcast, you know, companies are really promoting awareness of podcasts.
Yes.
So if you're listening and you really like the podcast, you should tell someone. I know it's not, it's an American thing really, but any excuse for someone new to listen.
Yes, yeah. Well, somebody did actually tweet us out. I think it was it Colin? It was one of our regular listeners tweeted us out as sort of on a tripod link. So what's the hashtag is TRY pod, isn't it?
Yes. So tell your friends.
Yes. And if you're on Twitter, tweet us out as a hashtag tripod link as well. So what have you been up to this week or since we last spoke? It's been about
a month.
I've
been busy promoting podcasts, Dave. you remember last month I told you I'd watched the first sort of three of Sneaky Pete.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I finished it now, and it's excellent.
Good. I still haven't got to the end, but yes.
Really, really good. Really good. Just everything about it was great. I really like the main guy, Giovanni, is it Ribisi?
Ribsy.
Yeah, well, he's great. I feel like someone asked me what it's like, and I said, what they said was, I really like Fargo. Was there anything like Fargo? Which is like out of left field, because it's like, I could have been talking about the Gilmore Girls. This guy, is it Fargo? But it's not Fargo. Like it feels like that kind of, it's got that some DNA of that somewhere.
Yeah.
So no, it does feel like that. But yeah, it's really great on Amazon. Almost worth having Amazon for a month. Just watch it.
Yeah, I am really enjoying it. I just haven't found the time to get back to it yet.
Go, man.
It has been renewed for a second season as well. So
also good.
So yes.
Without putting too fine a point in it, it sets up for a second season very nicely.
Right. Okay. Good. I will get back to that. It's just there's so much stuff that's getting recorded like on a daily basis at the moment. I'm struggling to get back to the sort of stuff that I know is going to be around for a while. So
I suppose that's the beauty of things like this where you can rely on them for a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of which,
yes.
Here we go. I've been watching a new Netflix series called Abstract. Now this is a bit peculiar for what we normally talk about.
Okay.
But this is a Netflix documentary series about designers and various people who design various things. So the first person was a young man who does the covers of The New Yorker. The second was a man who designed Air Jordans in the 80s and like through to now. And the third one was a lady who does set design for operas and music, and she's done them for like Beyonce and Adele. So there's lots of really different design and creative processes there, which I thought was really interesting.
That's cool. Yeah, I've just looked that up. I've added it to my list.
Again, it's not going anywhere. So, you know, don't rush out. But it's really interesting to see if you like history and you like design really the beauty of it is that watch it if you like sports because of the Air Jordans or music. So if you're a person that likes things, it's probably got something for you somewhere there.
Good. Yes.
But yeah, that's really great. I've been playing, you know what, I picked up in a sale somewhere Far Cry Primal, which is like a year old now, so this is super old news, but it's really, really good. I mean, they said it was one of those games where it's just Far Cry with a different skin and it's tried new things, but it's not amazing, but I'm really enjoying it. I'm plugging away. It's not, like you say, it's not groundbreaking, it's not The Witcher, but it's really good and interesting mechanics.
Cool. I've never been a huge fan of the Far Cry series, just generally. So, yeah, it may be one I'd go and look up at some point, but yeah.
I've also been looking at picking up in a sale. They announced a few days ago that they were doing a new Lord of the Rings game, Shadow of War, which is a sequel to Shadow of Mordor, which I've been looking at maybe picking up a game of the year or something. So if I do, I'll let you know about that. But yeah.
Yes, Shadow. I know I played Shadow of Mordor a little bit. It didn't grab me that much, but I did quite enjoy it. I know Chris, formerly of this podcast, used to really enjoy it. So it may be something looking at.
It's all more stealth games, which annoys me generally about video games, that everything's either a sandbox stealth game or a sandbox stealth game. Right? But which actually, funnily enough, bringing me back is a great thing about Far Cry Primal, is that so often in Far Cry games, you're sort of encouraged to play stealthily. And you are to an extent, but I don't bother with that. Which is great, because you're allowed that freedom to just run up to people and hit them over the head with a stick, which is, you know, simplification, but that's actually what you're doing.
Yeah,
which
well,
is really good.
They also worked on that with the latest Deus Ex game as well, because that's traditionally something you probably play quite stealthily, but they wanted to they boosted the mechanics. If you just want to go in guns blazing, you can do. And yes, it's a little more tricky, but it's entirely doable to play through it that way.
Good to have that option.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Because
I intend to go back to Metal Gear Solid 5. I remember I don't know if you remember me saying that I had a bit of trouble getting into that, really. Yeah, but I feel like if I just hang the stealth, let's just do it. Let's just shoot some men. Oh, that's the reason why I was thinking of that, because I played the, I don't know if you saw, there was a beta of Ghost Recon Wildlands, which is really good.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
really good game. But if it feels very Metal Gear Solid 5.
Right.
But also with a slightly Far Cry edge, I suppose, that there's this big map and there's just loads of bits to do and you liberate a little, you know, hold or whatever, a keep, effectively.
Yeah. I might have to go and have a look at that. I'm still stuck on my Elite Dangerous addiction right now.
That's good. That's great.
So, I'm working my way up through the ships. I've got the Asp, which is kind of quite a good explorer ship, so you can go out and find new galaxies and that sort of stuff in it, or you can stick a cabin in it and do like little runs and take passengers and that sort of stuff. So I've been using that, and also got myself a Vulture, which is basically it's a small ship with two giant guns on it, so which is great fun because you can fly out to what they call resource extraction systems or resources. They're known as res sites, so you can go out to these areas and they're where people go to mine, but you get pirates that come out and try to harass the miners.
Sure. So
you go and shoot down the pirates that come out, and that's a great way of earning money. And if you've got a fairly decent ship, like, you know, the Vulture's quite a powerful ship for such a small size, works really, really well. And yeah, you can kind of go out there and make sort of, you know, 2 to 5 million in an hour, you know.
That's great.
which is really good fun.
Yeah,
admittedly, some of the big ships in the game, like, you know, are like 150 million to just buy them.
So you need the money.
Yeah, so you need the money. And that's literally just buying the ship. You've then got to outfit it, which could easily double the cost of it, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's good because it gives you that'll give you a longer, like, playtime then to get the good ones.
Yeah, it does. But those little ships, I mean, quite often, even when people buy larger ships, they'll keep some of the little ones just because the feel's so different to them, you know. Because, I mean, if you're flying a big ship, it might turn like a barge, but you've got like a massive guns on it. Whereas the little ship's kind of, you know, you're flying in a little fighter. It's far more fun. So they're great fun. They're really, really good fun game to play that. At the moment, really, though, like I think many other people, I'm treading water until Mass Effect comes out.
Yes. That seems to be the consensus.
Yes. So, I mean, Mass Effect officially is released on, I think it's next Thursday it's officially released. But if you've got EA access,
Yes, yeah.
They're doing something so you can get onto it earlier. I don't think that's going to be the full game. It seems to say you can play like 10 hours of it.
Mm. Yeah, well, isn't that access thing anyway, that you can play 10 hours of any game. So if that's like a little, like a chunk of the game.
Right, okay. So, because I do have EA All Access or the Origin Access on the PC because it's £20 for the year. So
yeah, which is great.
Which
yeah,
is
yeah,
just
yeah.
a bargain. So
I'm reading the 21st.
Right, okay.
Which so would 21st, be Tuesday.
So Tuesday. So hopefully I'll be playing that on Thursday this week because I think they said it's the 16th when we'll get access to it. And then everybody else gets access and you get the full game on the 21st.
You'll have to let me know either way. I'm very interested because, I mean, it's one of those things that I played the first one is fine. The second one was really good. Didn't play the third one. So I'm interested in what's, because obviously it's a huge game. You know? Yeah. So I'm interested in what the consensus is.
I suspect it will be good. It's rare BioWare gets a bad review on something. So.
No, that's true. I'm also a big fan of Dragon Age. So I guess can't lose, sort of.
Yeah, well, they've said they've taken some of the stuff that they learned from Dragon Age 3 and mixed that into the whole Mass Effect stuff. So that to me is a positive.
And you didn't go out and buy a Nintendo Switch there, Dave?
No, I haven't. It's an awful lot of money to spend on basically one game.
Yes, so. It is. It's also, yeah, a console that seems like the beta of an actual console.
Yeah.
Feels like a prototype of what's actually the good one.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't bought a Nintendo since the Wii, and the Wii was a great fun.
I mean, that's a good one to get to end on.
Yeah. So I haven't been back and got one. And talking to Matt a few weeks ago about this was that, you know, he wants one because he spends a lot of time being driven around in the back of a car because he can't drive.
I was thinking, because I spend a lot of time on the bus, so there's a similar appeal in that, you know.
Whereas 9 times out of 10, when I'm going somewhere, I'm driving myself.
Of course. So, you still could.
I don't think that the police might frown upon me playing Nintendo Switch while I'm driving. So, speaking of Nintendo Switch, actually, the Gadget Show came back this week. They did an unboxing of it on the Gadget Show. That was kind of interesting because it's the new cast lineup for the show. They've tweaked the format slightly as well. Craig Charles is now sort of basically acting as host, with the other three people being the experts.
Sure.
So whereas before it was like four experts, now it's sort of one host and then three experts. So Craig's doing like all the studio bits, and then the other three are doing the kind of stuff that's filmed outside and that sort of stuff. It was good. It's nice to see them doing something a little bit different with it. I think it works quite well as a format. They've had little things in, like what they're trying to do is they've recording it right up sort of the week before it goes out on air,
so it's really current,
so it's very, very current, which is why they're allowed to do the Switch this week. But it also means that they get better audience interactions. So they're getting people to tweet things into them. And like, they've got this thing at the moment where they've got the most powerful blender like you can buy. And they're offering to blend things that annoy people, like, you know, gadgets that don't work for how they should and that sort
That's
of stuff.
Excellent.
So and it's this like blender is apparently brilliant at kind of blending almost anything. So they're offering people to sort of tweet them and send them their stories. And then they'll blend the gadget on air for them. But yeah, that's all shot up in Birmingham as well. So
reminds me actually of something I watched this week from last week, the first episode of the new Top Gear, which I know you talked about last week.
Yeah. What did you think?
Is it series 2 or like series?
Series 24, they are billing it as. So
new series 2 is what it is.
Yes, new series 2.
I really liked it, actually. I know the last one was on yesterday for us, so I'm sure you'll tell me about that. But I really liked it, actually. I watched a couple of the series before, but I'm not a Chris, as I know you're not, I'm not a Chris Evans fan. So I didn't really stick with it. But this I might stick with. I'm not into cars particularly, but it was good. It was old Top Gear, which I remember watching at sort of 15 and being really interested in.
I think it is working really well. I think Matt needs to loosen up a little bit. He feels a bit overly scripted when he's in the studio. And those studio bits aren't quite working quite well. But
like you said last time, they've gone back to that three person dynamic, and that seemed to really work.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that it's works
tighter, I suppose.
Yeah, that works an awful lot better. The studio stuff, I think it still needs a little bit of work, but it works quite nicely. I quite like the fact that they have the guest in for quite a large segment of the show now as well. You know, he comes on to do the car, but he basically stays on the couch with them, and it's the four of the people on the couch, so they're having conversations backwards and forwards.
Yeah, it's like you might get less time per guest, but you get more a different, you know, they talk about the different features that they do as they go, so that's you know, you get a bit more from them.
So I think that works quite well. I think they've tweaked the format enough for it to be a little bit different but still be Top Gear. And you know, and the film pieces I think are working quite well. There was a quite a good one this week where they took two supercars, or as Matt says, one supercar and one Porsche 911. So they took these two kind of, you know, flashy cars and started off in Las Vegas and drove up into the mountains, because the idea was that they'd made comments about the fact that supercars are, you know, or big flashy convertibles are perfect for all seasons. Sure. And they were, the producers were trying to prove them wrong by making them basically drive through all four seasons. So that was really good.
I think that's a good device, the sort of unseen producer type 1984 bad guy. It's like you never see, this isn't really a person so much as like a concept, and that's, you know, that's good. I like that.
So I think it's working well. It's working infinitely better than it did last year anyway,
which is great,
which is good, mainly not having the annoying Gingerman on it.
you were saying last week that in the first one there was just the three of them, there was no Sabine Schmidt or anybody else. Did they do anything in the second one? Or
no, I know they've said that Sabine Schmidt and the other guy, I can't remember his name, but they've said that they are going to probably pop up at some point, but I don't know when or if that is actually the case, but that seemed to be the impression they were giving. I suspect they may pop up for one or two like special films or something, which is fine, because that's sort of old Top Gear used to do that as well. So, you know, I think that's perfectly okay. I like it a lot more than I did last year's. I think it's working really well. So I'm glad that they seem to have found something. I don't know what the ratings have been like. That's the only thing. I'd need to look at that. But certainly the general consensus seems to be it's working a lot better, which is great. The only other things this week, Legion. I don't know whether you've caught any of this yet.
I watched the first episode. I thought it was very good. Tell me more.
It's probably the strangest show ever to be on TV. That's so weird.
When we talked about Fargo DNA, that's actually got, I think, the someone in the to do with the visuals.
The cinematographer.
Is from Fargo.
Yeah, so it's such a strange show. And you're presented with certain things throughout it, but where you think they make sense and then they don't, and then they do, and then they don't again.
I was describing it to my fiance as, do you remember, did you watch House?
Yes.
I think it was a 3-episode run of House where he got, he got shot.
Yes.
And throughout the episode, it was like he was hallucinating, so you weren't sure which bits were real and which weren't, and it turned out a lot of it was, it's a whole thing. But it was good in that way, where you're like, did that happen? Did this happen? Yeah. Who is it? It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a lot of that in this show, and they do a brilliant, brilliant job with it, because in less skilled hands, that could all horribly fall apart.
Absolutely.
And they're managing to pull it together and keep it focused so well, but it is weird and strange, and you know, because you're dealing with a guy who is mentally unstable, and you're trying to sort of tell this story, but you're sort of inside his head at the same time, so things alter, and you know, characters change and things change, and it's just very odd, very, very strange, and kind of, it's sort of get onto the roller coaster and sort of hang on whilst it goes through this up and down of this story, because it is crazy. But I love it. I think it's so well put together. It's only, I think, 8 or 10 episodes this first season. It's a really short, you know, it's relatively short as these sort of shows go, but I think that's probably sensible, because you can pack a lot in, and you know, you're not wasting any content, you know, having to stick filler episodes in, because it wouldn't work.
I always think Marvel Netflix shows could be 2 or 3 episodes shorter, and they'd be great.
Yes, yeah. Speaking of which, early reviews of Iron Fist have not been great, unfortunately.
Yes.
I will reserve judgment until I've seen it myself, because but yeah, the earlier reviews have been a bit like snotty about it. So yeah, we'll have to see what it's like when that comes out, but we're not far off.
Speaking of super, that's the 16th, is that right? This Friday?
17th, yes, maybe. I think so, something like that.
Anyway,
Iron Fist, yeah, 17th.
So that is Friday, yeah.
Hang on. And 17th is, yes, that is Friday, yes.
Yes, and it'll all be on Netflix.
Yes.
Right, in one. Speaking of superheroes, we went to see Logan last week.
Oh, yes. What did you think of it?
Have you seen it, Dave?
Yes, I have seen it. Yes.
It was excellent. It was really, really good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. In actual fact, I don't think I can't remember whether I've spoken about this. I may have spoken about it last week. But yeah, we went to see it in 4DX.
Oh, yes.
In Birmingham. Have you? Yes, it's. I'm not entirely sure that was the right film to do it on, but
that's for what is effectively a gimmick. That's a very dark film to pick.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing is because they've obviously only got one cinema screen. They have to rotate the films that are in it quite quickly. So I think I saw it on the last day that it was running Logan, and then it went on to Beauty and the Beast. Which is like sort of falls apart, but they are doing the new Fast and Furious on it apparently, which I think might be a little bit more appropriate because you're going to have more things which are directly, you know, you in a car and the camera, you know,
going through your hair and stuff.
Yeah, so I think that might work. Sort of those sort of action films might work a little bit better. I mean, it was fine and interesting and different, and you know, you get these odd smells come in and you get like wind and you get
that's peculiar
and you get like rain and it, you know, it throws water at you. It's really entertaining and worth doing if you're around and it's a film that you think will be suitable for it. But yeah, I mean, it was fine with Logan. I would like to see it with something in 3D, something like Avatar. I think would be quite interesting.
Yes,
on that,
definitely, you know? Yeah, especially because Avatar's got that whole sort of exploration of a strange world that there's all these different things and, you know, different animals and stuff. Yeah. I think that would be. What about Kong Skull Island? That might be good.
Yes, yeah, I think they are doing Skull Island on it
as
well.
That would be a good one to go.
So that might be an interesting one as well. But yeah, it's they're based around the country now, but. I think we read out a list last week. They are around the country. There's one on Broad Street in Birmingham, which is the local one to us. So, it's worth going to check out though, if you've not tried it yet. So yeah, I don't think there's anything else other than Designated Survivor came back, which is brilliant. Still going really, really well. Always good to see Kiefer Sutherland on screen. He's always entertaining. So that's back on Netflix now. So I'm really enjoying that. But other than that, I think that's been all my stuff this week. So let's move on to some film and TV news. We'll start off the film and TV news this week with a few renewals, because there was, for some reason, there was an absolute ton of renewals this week. Traditionally, we don't usually get all the renewals in until May, but they're really starting to do some the early renewals at the moment. So first up, launch date of a show, obviously, Game of Thrones, for those that have been hiding under a rock, is back on the 17th of July at 2 a.m. and then at 9 or 10 p.m. on the 18th as well on Sky Atlantic. So there's that first. Renewals, though, we've got The 100 has picked up a fifth season. Billions has picked up a third season, and it's only halfway through on both sides of the Atlantic. It's only halfway through its second. So that's good. Riverdale has picked up a second season as well. So that goes along with all the other Berlanti DC shows that have already been picked up. So he's got another one that's also been picked up. Taboo, the BBC have announced they've picked up another one of that as well. Which
you caught that, Dave? Any good?
I've caught the first couple of episodes of it, and then it got lost in the sort of melee of other things. I haven't got back to that yet, but I enjoyed it. It was fine. It's not quite as compelling as Peaky Blinders, which is the other thing that Stephen Knight's known for. But yeah, it's okay. You know, it's fine. I know there are a lot of big fans out of it there. So, you know, I will try and get back to watch the rest of that because I have got them recorded. And then a series of unfortunate events. Netflix have renewed for a second season, which was pretty inevitable given the popularity of the first one. So That's also coming back. And one quick air date thing as well. Prison Break finally has been picked up by a UK network, and it's Fox, who also run it in the US. So they've probably known they've had this for a while, but Fox have announced that Fox UK are running it from Monday, the 10th of April at 9 p.m. Do you ever watch the original Prison Break?
I'm not sure if I was old enough. No, I remember it being on, but I wasn't sort of the age where it was something that would interest me in any way.
Right. Okay. Yes.
It was twins, was it? Twins?
No, not twins, brothers.
Brothers. They look very similar.
Yeah, well, yes, both with shaved heads. But yes, the brothers who then went on to be in Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, see, there you go. 2005 to 2009, so I was 11 to 15, I think.
You ridiculous child.
So it was all Toy Story and Spider-Man.
So
this is 15 I'm talking.
Yeah. So Prison Break was about two brothers. One of them gets locked up and the other one goes, basically tattoos himself and gets himself arrested. Tattoos himself with the plans of how to escape.
I see.
And then he goes to sort of break them out, basically. Gets himself arrested and then breaks the pair of them out.
It was quite complicated then, because that took 4 years to do. That was quite...
He broke them out in the first season. Then the second season was then on the run. The third season, I think, was then being locked back up again. And the fourth season, I think, had them working for some sort of government agency, I think.
That's good. It's good when they move along like that.
Yeah. So that's now back for a new fifth season event series. So we don't know whether we're getting another one after it. But I'm looking forward to that coming back because it was fun. And I like those guys. Wentworth Miller and Dominic Purcell are good fun. So those were just a few renewals and air date bits and pieces. The actual news, we've apparently learned that there is a Night Manager 2 script in development. Did you watch the Night Manager? I'm assuming you did.
No, I didn't. But oh, wow. I'm a huge Hugh Laurie fan, and I was told to watch it so many times that it just escaped me. And I feel very bad about that.
You've got Amazon, though. I think it's on Amazon.
Yes, I do.
Yes. So I think it's either on Amazon or it's due to come onto Amazon. So you can probably find it on there if it's not on the BBC Catch Up. It's not on iPlayer anymore. I don't think it probably will be at this point. But I think it's due on Amazon, so you can probably find it on there to watch.
Worth a go.
Definitely worth a go. It's absolutely brilliant. It's a really, really good series, particularly if you like Hugh Laurie. And it's got Loki in it as well. So
sure.
Tom Hiddleston is in it. And Olivia Colman, who is also great. So what's interesting about this is that the original show was based off a book, and there was only one book. It's not like there was a series. So whatever they come up with now is basically original work.
You're going to Game of Thrones it.
Well, yeah, kind of. Because I suppose Game of Thrones are doing that at this point, yeah. But so they're kind of expanding on John le Carré's original source novel and trying to write a follow-up to it. David Farr, who's the guy that did the adaptation of the first series, I don't think is involved because it said it's been written by a team of writers. So, you know, but he has sort of said, you know, there is potential to do something else, but I'm not involved with it. So
that's difficult, isn't it?
I mean, I don't know. He may, I sounds like he decided he didn't want to do it. So,
but I mean, with the right writers, you never know.
Yeah, with the right writers, it could be good. Exactly which characters would come back, whether it would be Tom Hiddleston again, which you sort of think it would have to be because he was the main lead. Hugh Laurie was playing the bad guy in it, so I suspect you probably wouldn't see Hugh Laurie in it. You'd probably get Olivia Colman again, I would think.
Of course. Queen of British drama, Olivia Colman.
Yes. Has to be in everything. It's a rule.
We can't have a British drama without Olivia Colman.
Yeah. So this should point out, this is no way a done deal. The production company have released a statement called, their production company is called The Ink Factory. So The Ink Factory, BBC and AMC are in early stages of developing a potential second series of The Night Manager, but nothing is yet definitive and we have nothing to announce. So, yeah, I mean, basically they are working on it. And it would be silly not to, I think, because the first one was such a huge success. So it makes sense to at least see whether you can do something. I just hope they don't just do it for the sake of money, which is always the difficult thing, particularly when AMC are involved, because AMC produce some great dramas, but they do tend to see success and just see dollar signs straight after that. So they have to be a little bit more careful. I mean, you know, but you are talking about the people that produce Breaking Bad, or, you know, the network that paid for Breaking Bad. So I don't know. It's difficult. AMC can be a little prickly at times. So I don't know. Hopefully, if it's going to happen, they'll make sure they nail it and get it right and not screw it up. Moving on from that, we're moving into space. And Star Trek Discovery has said hello to Jason Isaacs.
Yeah, I heard about this.
As Captain Lorca, apparently is the guy's name, who will be in charge of the USS Discovery. But unlike previous Star Treks, isn't the lead character in the show, as I think we've mentioned a number of times before. That's Sonequa Martin-Green, who is Sasha in The Walking Dead, who's playing a lieutenant commander with caveats, which we still don't know exactly what that means. But she is the main character that you're going to be following, with the captain being, well, the captain. But how that will work and whether, you know, he's going to be in the entire thing or whether he gets killed off at some point, I don't know. But yeah, Jason Isaacs, I think, is a good person to add on to that list. What do you reckon?
Yeah, definitely. He's got that sort of, he's an authoritative looking man, and he's, you know, he's very watchable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's got that sort of, you can imagine him, this is a weird, like, I'm sure the furthest away, but in Harry Potter, he had that kind of almost a sneery quality that is quite, I suppose, distant and quite authoritative and quite, you know, if he was like a hard-nosed captain guy, you could see that in that, you know.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I mean, your other captains that we've had so far basically are Kirk, Picard, Sisko, Janeway, Archer. And out of that list, the ones that have been probably best, I would say, I mean, obviously I love Kirk, but, you know, out of the modern people, Picard and Sisko, both of whom were sort of very serious actors.
Yeah,
you know? I think Jason Isaacs sort of fits into that role quite well. He's from that kind of background. So I think that's quite a good pick. And like you say, he has that authority to him.
Sure.
You know.
But he's still, you know, he's a handsome, nice, friendly looking man. If you see pictures of him that aren't in Harry Potter, he's a friendly looking man.
Yeah. No, I think
so it could go any which way, which is great.
And he might actually be able to use his own accent in this, because most of the stuff you see him in, he's having to use an American accent, whereas with this, he'll probably be allowed to use his English, I would have thought. So, yeah, that would be quite good. So moving on to the next story, Claire Holt, who is from The Originals and The Vampire Diaries, has joined a new ABC pilot, which, apart from the casting of Claire Holt, which is all fine and lovely, and, you know, that's great, I thought the pilot sort of sounded quite interesting. It's based around the premise that after the events of 9/11, the US government sets up a secret think tank that comprises of the most creative minds in science and entertainment, and that tasks them with dreaming up with making man-made disasters scenarios and possible solutions to those. Because the hypothetical ideas are deemed extremely dangerous, the list is then sealed and the program is shut down. But when a catastrophe occurs that is ripped directly from the Doomsday playbook, the team is brought back together years later to prevent the disasters of their own making. Now, I actually pointed out when I wrote this article, this is exactly the premise of the comic book Batman War Games. Because, you know, Batman...
It sounds interesting, though.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great idea, but it is basically the premise for Batman War Games, because Batman has a playbook of the way that he can set up a bunch of war games in motion in Gotham as a way it's slightly different, because he sort of does it as a way to consolidate the power all under him, under his Matches Malone moniker, which is his sort of his underworld mob boss character that's him in disguise. But he's never enacted it, and the girl who is a spoiler in the comic books enacts it. And without understanding that Matches is also the Batman. So she enacts it. And then, of course, Matches doesn't show up to the meeting he's supposed to be at, and all hell breaks loose. And ends up with all that gang war. So it's a similar kind of idea to that. And the fact that Batman always has doomsday scenarios, unlike what happens if, what happens if Superman goes rogue? What happens if Green Lantern goes rogue? You know, so he has a way of bringing everybody down.
Do you know, I read an article once that every video game character effectively boils down to Batman in the Arkham games, with things like Detective Vision and Grapple. And maybe we can extend that to television narratives as well. Most of them can boil down to a Batman narrative somewhere in there.
Maybe we can, you know how South Park did an episode about the fact that Simpsons had done everything.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It sort of, maybe you can have that with dramas, like, you know, Batman did it.
Sure.
So, yeah. But I know, I thought that sounds like quite an interesting premise for a show. So basically they will have a new disaster each week to, you know, every few episodes to present.
It'll be interesting because they'll have written these disasters. They'll know, or you'd think they'd know the sort of patterns that they're going to follow.
Yeah.
So how they're going to then try to stop them. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, the cast includes, this is only a pilot, by the way, it's not gone to series yet, but the cast also includes, so it's Claire Holt, who is played Rebecca in the originals and Vampire Diaries, good old Jack Davenport from Coupling and Smash and Flash Forward and Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and you might not know the name, but you'll know the face when you see it, that guy.
The guy with the face.
He's playing Warren, who is a famous action writer who's created skulls were put to up to dreaming the doomsday scenarios. So you can bet that's probably quite an arrogant character. He plays that quite well. Rachel Laverne, who is from Under the Dome, plays Faye, who's deputy director of Homeland Security, who's landed with the task of bringing the team back together.
I hope she's not the woman in Suicide Squad, because that was a bad role.
No, she's not. I don't think
that was bad. make her a good director of something.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Taye Diggs, who was in Empire and Murder in the First Place, Dr. Davis, another former member of the Doomsday Project, who's now an engineer and architect, but was formerly the head of FEMA, and Dan Bird, who was in Cougar Town and Heroes, who plays a Nate Silver-like character who is the founder of the New Oracle, a site that predicts the outcomes of political events and sports and stock trading.
So it does have that sort of, I don't know if it's Legends of Tomorrow smack, where there's these people who do different things that come together in a sort of, you know, there's almost an Avengers quality to it.
I know what you mean.
People with very different skills come together to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it seems a bit like, I think a sort of Avengers feel to it, I guess. You are right, yeah. And this sort of idea of there being a doomsday thing that is sort of happening each week, I quite like as well. I think, you know, I think it's got potential. But yeah, it's coming to, well, it's a pilot for ABC, so we'll have to see whether it goes anywhere. It's got quite strong people behind it. It's got pilots written by one of the guys behind Justified and somebody behind a show called The Good Neighbor, but it's produced by Carol Mendelsohn, who was one of the people behind the CSI franchise. So that's a fairly hefty kind of person to be behind it. So yeah, I mean, I think that's got some potential. Hopefully it goes okay, because I'd quite like to see that. I think it could be quite good. That's all the news we have for this week. Next up, we have an interview.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
this week's interview is with the composer Sage Lewis. Sage is a composer for a film called The Operator, which was one of IndieWire's set and hidden gems at South by Southwest last year. It's a dark comedy about love and technology, IndieWire highlighting it as the ideal humorous mix of contemporary challenges and intimate conundrums that fit right in at South by Southwest. Stars Martin Starr from Silicon Valley. It's actually available to watch right now on Netflix as well, so go and look up Operator. It looks like a really entertaining film. It's about a guy who is developing this app and ends up using his wife's voice for the app and sort of starts to fall in love with the app over his wife. So it's Martin Starr who plays Guilfoyle on Silicon Valley, and he's absolutely brilliant in that. He pops up in a number of different things, but I haven't actually watched the entire film yet, but it looks really, really good. He also wrote the score for a little interactive piece called The Surrogate, which is really interesting. It's kind of an interactive movie slash kind of art piece. It's a really lovely score that sort of helps immerse the participant to the point of view of the protagonist. User controls the story leading up to sort of this dramatic climax, and that's sort of set in a future where couples will use surrogates to help them through marriage problems. But we explain that a bit more in the interview. So really kind of interesting. There's a bit of talk about VR and about Operator, which you can now watch on Netflix. So we'll see you afterwards with highlights for next week. Hi, Sage.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for coming onto the podcast. Should we start by doing a bit of background?
Sure. Well, I started in music, just playing piano as a kid, and I was a soccer player too, or football player, but I hurt my knees, and it was like the end of the world when I was 12 or 13 years old. So I basically cried for a week, pure straight tears. And then I sat down, I was like, I'll play the piano. And it like took away all of my pain and sadness of never getting to be a soccer player again. And I was like, this is actually great. I'll just play piano and I don't need to worry about sports because this is like better. I just had that realization and I got serious about it. I put a band together. We were like a jazz group and sort of played world music and improvised and did Coltrane's type kind of sounding stuff. And then didn't know what composing was, but I just had ideas and like, okay, you do this, you do that, you do that. Okay. And just sort of came up with things, gave people stuff to play and directed them. And then went to a classical conservatory, Oberlin Conservatory of Music, which had a very rigorous academic orchestral training in kind of like 20th century contemporary music. And then that was great, but it wasn't like my personal voice. And they sort of make you learn this type of music. And so it was a good training, but I still didn't really know kind of how to express myself when I was hearing. I like had some really good skills, but there was other skills I didn't have. And I moved out to LA to go to school at CalArts, California Institute of the Arts, which was great because it's much more kind of open and you kind of like stay whatever you want. You've got all these great resources and cool people around you. There's a film school and a theater school. So I just, and a dance school. So I just was working with theater directors, choreographers, and filmmakers the whole time I was there. And then I graduated and it was like, they all, half of them stayed in LA and there was this great creative community and they were really talented. A lot of them are really great directors now doing interesting work. And so it's given me a good sort of base community that, I mean, I don't like just only work with people from there, but it's nice to have that kind of core and meet people through that and then get, you know, heard through that and stuff. So
yeah,
that was about 8 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago when I finished school and I've just been living in LA. Working on, I kind of started out doing a lot more experimental stuff and kind of I was like interested in doing installations and kind of that and more performance work. And it sort of boiled down to just scoring music for digital media, whether it's like a film or, it's interactive or virtual reality or something, anything like that.
Yeah. You've done some games, you've done virtual reality projects, which we'll come on to in a minute. The film that you've done recently is Operator, which I've not seen, I've only seen the trailer for it, but it's basically about a guy who develops a medical app which has a really rude and offensive kind of personality to it. And they insist that he replaces the voice and personality with something else. So he uses his wife, who's a receptionist, as the replacement. And he sort of starts collecting data for the algorithm and sort of falls in love with the algorithm as well as his wife. That's the basic idea. Yeah.
It's great. That's a really good, I'm glad you took that away from the trailer, because if the trailer communicated all that, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it did. And I mean, as I say, I've only seen the trailer. It looks fantastic. I really like the look of it. It's very Black Mirror, I would say, if you know that TV show. It screams Black Mirror to me, which is brilliant because Black Mirror is an amazing show. It stars Martin Starr, who plays Guilfoyle on Silicon Valley, who's brilliant in that.
Huge fan of his.
Mae Whitman, who was on Parenthood Arrested Development, but does quite a lot of voice acting as well, which I thought was a really interesting person to pick, you know. Exactly. So I thought that was really good. How did you get involved with the music for that?
Well, I knew the director and writer and Logan Kibbins, who an editor and one of the producers and everything, who's been working on this project for a long time. Sir Opera Prima is a feature film. And a couple of years ago, probably at this point now, but about a year before I started, I bumped into her on set of another director who's a mutual friend, Ian Samuels, who directed a short film called Myrna, which is Myrna the Monster, which was like a huge hit at Sundance and South By the year before. And she actually asked me if I would work on another job that she was working on at the time. But she was like, but I really want you to work on my feature when we get to produce it. So that was pretty exciting. But, you know, like, it's a slow process. So another year went by and we were talking about it. And then finally they shot it in Chicago in July of 2015, and then brought it back. And we met up right away and she started giving me footage. She would just give me, I started really early on the process, earlier than most composers like to, but I knew this film would have a very compressed timeline of racing for festival deadlines, and that it would be, it could potentially be a lot of music. So I want to get started on it right away. So she just gave me like rough footage, and I just started putting music to it to try to get the tone right and come up with kind of some themes, and just working on broad strokes. And so she was editing it pretty rapidly, and I was like one step behind her scoring it. And then she got the locked cut. I think it was sometime in October, late October, or even early November. And at that point, like, I already had a lot of music written that we were talking about, and it was working pretty well. So then she locked in the edit, and I locked in the score. And scoring was a very like multi-phased process. So, and there was a lot of, there's 60 minutes of music, and it's a 91 minute film. Wow. So it's a lot of volume in terms of music. And it wasn't going to be that much, but like, as we were working on it and figuring out how music was playing more and more of a storytelling role in the film, we just realized, oh, actually this scene could do really well with music, and that scene could do music, and we might as well put it here. And by the end, it sort of became a very traditional film score in the sense that it was almost wall-to-wall music, which I normally don't like that much music, and neither does she. And I think most contemporary filmmakers don't. But for this film, it just worked. So in that sense, it's interesting. It's like an old-fashioned film score because it has so much music, which you don't see as much today in like contemporary indie filmmaking. But it's a very contemporary score in other ways, because it's got the style of music and the way music is used is very contemporary and like not like a score from the 60s or something.
Yeah.
So it was pretty interesting for me. And they're releasing the soundtrack. The Orchard, who is distributing the film, is also releasing the soundtrack. It's exciting kind of how it turned out to be sort of like a music film.
Yeah, the music's quite interesting for the movie. I've heard a few tracks off it. There's a lot of piano in there, but there's strings and stuff as well. You've also got a sort of modulated voice in there as well, which I thought was quite interesting. You can't really make out what it's saying, but it's sort of used musically, kind of embedded through the track as well. Was that you, or did you have people come in and do stuff for that, or is it stuff in the film?
It started out for me when I was writing the music, and I was like, okay, we got to use a vocoder in this. When that kind of idea popped in my head, it just made so much sense, because it makes the music sound like it's alive, or sound like it's a person or a robot.
Yeah.
Which is what we needed, because there are sort of like two versions of this character. There's the real person, and then the algorithm that's being constructed. It starts off with just a few like responses, automatic voice responses. But then as Joe, who's played by Martin Starr, develops this virtual version of his wife and falls in love with it, he takes it to a level of sophistication where it's like a real character that he falls in love with and has his own relationship with, and who this character helps him, because he gets panic attacks and he's always tracking his emotions with data and with apps and stuff on his phone. But now he's like, he needs to go a step further and just create this sort of data-driven life. It's sort of like these kind of like Frankenstein sense, where he's developing, creating this person who's a character, but you don't see the person, you just hear them. And so that character needs to be fleshed out, and music is like the best medium to flesh out this character. So I was figuring out how to try to give presence to this character and express their feelings and that character within his head psychologically. And then it was like, a vocoder is perfect for that. So I was just kind of saying things in as placeholders. But then when we went back and redid everything in the final version, they gave me all the dialogue recordings of Mae Whitman, her voiceover. And I took those and put them in. And then there was some that one of the writers, Sharon Green, just some dialogue. I don't remember where I got it, but I had it with hers and I put it in there. And then it was like, oh, her voice has to sort of be subliminally in here too. So it's the writer and the actor is where the actual voices are coming in, which worked out perfectly. Because you hear the voiceover from the character in their actual like dialogue of the film, but then you also hear all the things she's saying in this more subliminal way through the music. Like you said, you can't really decipher what she's saying, but you hear someone coming to life and speaking.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really, I've only heard a few tracks of the soundtrack, but it's a really nice sound to it. It's got, I think that's a really interesting idea. It's quite sort of bright and uplifting in a lot of places as well. Certainly the tracks I heard anyway, there's a lot of piano, but you're kind of mixing into strings, and the kind of music takes a slightly darker turn when that happens, which is quite nice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun because it was a film that I could really kind of geek out with the music on, with sort of the electronic stuff, because like normally things like using a vocoder is really fun, you know, for a composer, but you don't really get a good opportunity or justification for doing it.
Yeah.
But this film has like the justification all over it. So I really got to play around with that a lot. And then a lot of the synth and electronic instruments, I worked with an analog modular synthesist who's got like a whole wall and is this like genius scientist in his own right. His name was Joe, which was funny too, because the character in the film is Joe, who's in his lab creating, these crazy algorithms. But then there was this guy who's an analog modular synthesis, and he just knows how to handcraft sounds from scratch and bring in all these cool gear, whether it's old stuff, new stuff, anything in between. And we sat down and recreated every timbre, all the electronic timbres with his patching, different modules together to create it. And so that was really fun to kind of really get to geek out with electronic music. And then it has the acoustic score, which was necessary too, because I mean, it's kind of like the IVR Emily, the robo voice that the character Joe was developing. It was sort of like his own MIDI version of his wife. MIDI is in like the type of sort of virtual instruments where you can create fake violins or anything really, or electronic music. And it gives you all the data and the information to sort of fake the instrument.
Yeah.
And so, and in some ways improved and better, because they can do things that real musicians can't do. You can do anything with it. Yeah. Like there's really limitations, which was what he was finding with his wife. He was like, there's no limitations. I can like take my wife, but then and like fix, perfect her and do other things that she can't do.
Well, so, yeah. The next film, or the other film that you've been working on recently, is The Surrogate, which is a kind of VR movie set in the future where people use surrogates to try and sort of save their marriage, and you're taking the role of the wife who's sort of wandering around the corridors inside the house watching the husband with the surrogate wife. That's,
yeah.
Which is a bizarre concept for a thing. It's very kind of voyeuristic. Uh-huh. Won the South by Southwest Interactive Innovation Award for ARVR. How did you get involved with that?
The director of that is someone I became friends with a few years ago. And he was a video designer for Broadway.
Right.
And had a really great career with that, and sort of chose to leave it to move to LA, and still teaches video design for theater, but is really interested in VR and other types of emerging media. And so he started a VR club, kind of think tank sort of, where we would get together on Wednesday nights. He invited a few friends. We just get together, and we all were interested in VR, but we didn't like know much about it. So we want to be a little more hands-on with it. So we would just download VR experiences and talk about them. And we studied Unity, the game engine software that you need to know. Yeah. And we would do tutorials together. We like drink beer and do Unity tutorials and stuff like that. So, and that went on for about 4 months, and it was a lot of fun. It's like, okay, we got to make something. We're getting tired of just previewing and talking and learning stuff. And we've got a background now. So we created this one other experience, which was just kind of an assignment we did to learn, and spent a few months working on it. It was a Korean spa bit where you just sort of go into VR, and you can go into these different rooms. There's like a salt room and a gold room and like a lunar room, and and there was astronomical things happening in the sky with like eclipses and stuff while you're, it was really beautiful. It was sort of like a James Turrell style kind of aesthetic experience where nothing happens. It's all about nothing happening. And then that was done. He's like, okay, I'm going to do a real piece. So he kind of went full out and started developing The Surrogate, which I think there's a lot of parallels to Operator in a lot of ways, in terms of like a young married couple where kind of technology and sort of these new ideas are interfering in the relationship, and the way our relationships today gets mediated through technology, and both kind of sci-fi in different ways. So we just started like rapidly working on it really hard for about 4 or 5 months. And then that's different from filmmaking because you can always keep changing, and it's sort of like a living project.
Yeah. So what are you doing next?
Well, right now I'm scoring, writing music for a Google video. Actually, it's a Google Cardboard. It's like a marketing, Google Cardboard and an app that they have called Google Expeditions. There are sort of like educational experiences that they're putting into public schools for kids to be able to put on VR and visit, go to a powwow. This one, it takes you to a powwow on a Crow Indian reservation in Montana.
Oh, cool.
And you get to really like their kids, it focuses on kids in New York and showing how they can actually like learn more about culture and heritage through VR and those types of applications. And then the thing I'm most excited about, but I can't talk about it other than I just pilot for HBO, but I'm not allowed to say anything about it.
That's okay. Except for that. Yeah, no, don't worry, you get fired before it starts.
I want to talk about it.
Well, that brings me quite well onto the last couple of questions, because we cover a lot of TV stuff on the site, on the website. So our two final questions are always, what TV shows are you watching at the moment first?
Well, I just finished the third season of Silicon Valley, which is great. I haven't watched the second season of Mr. Robot, which is one of my favorite shows. I'm really excited.
Yeah.
I watched the first two episodes of Olive Kittredge, I think.
So,
that was really good, but I didn't. The last big thing that I really loved, Stranger Things, last thing that really got me. And so with Olive Kittredge got so much Emmys and it's gotten so many people talking about it, I think my expectations were too high, because I kept thinking in the way where Stranger Things, where just something happens and it's something totally crazy happens that's unexpected, and it just takes this narrative into this roller coaster.
Yeah.
And I kept watching kind of a couple hours thinking that that was going to happen. And it just didn't happen. It's like, oh, maybe this is just kind of a mood piece. It's like a nice mood piece. So
yeah.
I stopped that, and maybe we'll go back to it. I've been watching some of the High Maintenance, the way HBO kind of produced that. And I don't really get it yet. I'm curious. I want to keep watching, but it hasn't totally gotten me. I kind of like the web series version of that more so far. And then Transparent, but I haven't done a good job of watching Transparent, like episode one, season one, all the way through. I've sort of been skipping episodes. And so
yeah.
I really like it, but I don't have all the deep character stuff that people have who are watching the most recent season and saw every episode.
Yeah.
So I know I'm missing stuff, but I also like just want to watch the new stuff and not take all the time to go through. It's just so much a time commitment, all these great series.
Yeah, no, there's so much good stuff at the moment. It'll be interesting if you, as you get to do more TV work, whether that starts to affect your enjoyment of shows more, because I've talked to a lot of TV composers and they sort of do tend to say a lot of the shows they tend to pick when I ask them what they're watching tends to be things with practically no music in them. Because they're kind of like, you know, otherwise my composer brain turns on and I start watching things that's great. Or that's like, I mean, I spoke to Matt Quayle a number of times who does Mr. Robot. Cool. It's an amazing soundtrack. But he's one of those guys that's just like, you know, I need to just turn off, you know, when I'm watching stuff.
I the same thing. I just sit and I listen to music and not the dialogue because I'm so interested in it. And especially for that show, it's such good music.
Yeah, it's so good. My very last question is, if you could be involved with any TV show, past, present, or future, which one would it be?
I'd maybe take Matt Quayle's job. That's his music and that show is my style too. I kind of like dark stuff, and dramatic stuff with a lot of depth and complexity and like nuance and the ability to kind of do cool electronic stuff, but also have this very human kind of acoustic sound too. So, that's a pretty awesome show. I think kind of dramatic series, hour long series would be the most fun for me to score. And something that has the narratives gives a good reason to create some type of music sound that hopefully we haven't heard before because it's asking for weird stuff. That's not just like a symphony orchestra is like always a dream, fun thing to have at your disposal as a composer.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It's just been done so many times. I'd be really excited to do something that just has something new happening, which also is a fun creative and aesthetic round to explore as an artist. And it's also great because it gives attention to the score from audiences because there's a reason to kind of pay attention and listen to a score.
Yeah.
So, and some narratives just ask for going outside of the box.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, any of the shows that I watch, I would love to score.
Yeah.
Any of the ones that I guess I mentioned would be amazing to score.
No, Mr. Robot, I think would suit you quite well. I would have thought.
Yeah. Right.
I won't say anything to Mac. It's fine. All right. Thank you for coming on. It's been lovely to talk to you. Good luck with everything. I hope things move forward with the HBO show as well. That could be good.
That's a dream come true right there. So
awesome. Talk to you soon. Cheers.
All right. Thanks. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye. That was the interview with composer Sage Lewis. As I say, you can go on to Netflix and find Operator right now. It looks really funny, so go and check it out. Next up, we have highlights for next week. So shows you should be watching out for next week. I'm not sure how many of these you've seen, but Last Kingdom is arriving for a second season on BBC Two on the 16th at 9 p.m. Did you catch any of the first season of this?
No, I didn't. I think I heard good things about it.
Yeah, it seems to have gone down fairly well. It's not that long ago when the first season went out. I think it was only November last year. So That seems to have turned around fairly quickly. It's about Vikings invading the UK. And I mean, it's interesting because I started watching this around about the same time as I was also watching Vikings on Amazon as well. So it's interesting to see some of the same characters from kind of two different perspectives. But that was quite good. I've not watched the whole thing. Again, it was another one of those shows that I watched a few of and then kind of didn't manage to see all of it. So I need to go back and watch the rest the first season, but it does look really good. That's Last Kingdom season 2, BBC 2, 16th of March at 9 p.m. Iron Fist, as we all know, and we were talking about earlier, is 17th of March at 8 p.m. on Netflix. Going to be very interesting to see this. I am looking forward to it, but the early reviews have been negative.
You've put me off it now, Dave. I'll be honest with you. I was excited. Now I don't know.
Well, I don't know. The reviews haven't been great, but I wonder if that's just them looking for an opportunity to kick one of the shows, maybe. I don't know.
I always thought Iron Fist was only he was either really interesting when he was Daredevil, obviously, or it was really interesting when he was with Luke Cage. So I thought those two had a really interesting dynamic together in that sort of buddy comedy type thing. On his own, I don't know if there is a strong enough, if it will be strong enough without him being, oh, he's just Daredevil, or oh, he's just, you know, someone with a different, you know.
Of course, that would be an interesting thing if he is struggling. That would be an interesting thing to do moving forward.
That would be great.
Maybe make the second season of Luke Cage be a Luke Cage and Iron Fist.
Yes, that would be good. Just so don't do a second season of either of them, but just do season 2 quotes of Luke Cage and Iron Fist. Yeah. Well, it's the comic's called Power Man and Iron Fist, so I don't know if they could get away with calling it that or
maybe. Yeah, that would be interesting. See what happens with that. So yeah, that's coming on the 17th of March to Netflix. Happen Leonard season 2 of that coming to Amazon Prime. Which I haven't actually got around to watching yet. It's James Purfroy is the one of the main leads in it. So based on some novels by a cult author called Joe Lansdale, it's airing first on Amazon Prime. It airs on AMC after that as well, AMC UK, for the five people that have AMC UK.
you guys.
season 1 of that is coming to AMC on the 17th of March at 9 p.m. But season 2 and season 1, I think, he's probably still on there. So season 2 comes to Amazon Prime on the 17th of March as well. Shades of Blue, season 2 of that, J-Lo as an NYPD police detective. This apparently has been quite popular. I watched a few episodes of it and then fell away from it. But yeah, I mean, it seemed well made enough, but it is sort of just another police procedural as far as I can tell.
Sure.
But Shades of Blue season 2 coming to Sky Living on the 20th of March at 9 p.m. The Catch, which is one of the Shondaland series, that's coming to Sky Living on the 21st of March at 10 p.m. That's about a fraud investigator who is apparently becomes the victim of fraud by a fiance. So that seems to be doing fairly well. It's on its second season. Not as well as some of the other Shondaland shows, though, like Scandal, Grey's Anatomy, How to Get Away with Murder. So I don't know, but that's, if you want to watch that, it's on the 21st of March on Sky Living. And Into the Badlands season 2 of that, which was a really fun series, it's on Amazon Prime on the 21st of March, set in a sort of apocalyptic future where it's a sort of martial arts guy and a boy embark on this kind of road journey, which it's a bit Mad Max. But yeah,
great. That sounds good.
It's sort of Mad Max martial art, really good fun. So yeah, season 2 of that, Into the Badlands, that lands on the 21st of March on Amazon Prime. So unless you've got anything else you want to add in?
Tell your friends about the podcast.
Yes, tell your friends about the podcast.
And try some new podcasts.
Yes, but make sure you still listen to this one.
still do this one, but try other ones as well.
You could always go out and try. If you're a fan of The Walking Dead, or if you're a fan of 24, you can always go over to entertainmenttalk.org and find both those over there, which me and Matt also do. So Matt, who occasionally does this show. So there's some more podcasts you can go and listen to. As for us, if you want to find more information information throughout the week on air dates and all that sort of stuff, you can find the website at geektown.co.uk. You can get in touch with your questions and comments on podcast@geektown.co.uk. You can leave a message on the website post. You can find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, or on Instagram at geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye everyone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.